Is it muted? Oh, hey, there we go. I didn't do anything, so somebody, the magic man at the back, must have hooked me up. Well, I'm so excited to be here. Josh kind of sprung this on me a couple days ago, where he said, why don't you do the whole service instead of just sharing the normal, like, 10 minutes that you do? And I'm going to be honest, the 16-year-old in me was like, no, I can't have a whole service. I don't like, what am I going to say? These people know me. It's actually harder, I feel like, to share in front of your sending church than it is to share in a village in Africa where nobody knows you and you may never see them again. But this is a lot more pressure. And there's lights here, which normally that's not something I'm used to either. But I'm so excited for this opportunity this morning. And I don't know, I'm looking at the time and there's so much in my head these last couple days that I'm like, oh my gosh, I've realized this morning, how am I going to fit it all into the time that I'm allowed? So hopefully you guys don't mind having lunch at 2:30. So it should be fine. But I actually had X grab a couple photos this morning. I sent them over to him because I don't really have a title for this message, but a lot of Vaughn's words were in my head these last couple days of, I feel like if this was going to be a title, I would say it's a combination of like eliminate your excuses and burn your bridges in a good way. Not like burn your bridges, like tell everyone you hate them and get out of my life and, you know, run off to Africa, because that's not what I did, I don't think, right? Okay, just checking. But yeah, so X, if you could throw up that picture. This is me and Josh. This is our humble beginnings. Me and Josh both used to love to, sorry, Pastor Josh. Me and Pastor Josh used to love to hide out in the sound booth. Neither of us liked to be on stage, which I think it's really ironic that now both of us are up here today, because we would do everything in our power to not have to leave that booth. And I know, obviously, we haven't aged at all, so the only way of telling that this photo... The only way of telling this photo is about 20 years old is by the computer monitor. But otherwise, we haven't... I'm glad we really... I think we look great, Josh. Me and you. Yeah, thanks. But yeah, so... I remember, I think Josh has given me one of the biggest backhanded compliments that anyone's ever given me. He once said to me, he said, man, when I met you, you're like, when you were 15 or 16, mind you, when he met me, I think for the first 3 months that I came to youth group, my mom brought me and would sit in the parking lot in case I got nervous and wanted to run home. So a little bit of background to why Josh said this. He's like, man, when I first met you, you were awkward, bro. Like you were like painfully shy. I didn't think you were ever going to snap out of it. Which was a huge compliment to me, knowing that obviously I think I have snapped out of that, because there was no way I was going to be up here at age 15. I had all I could do to sit in a quiet room of other youth out of fear that I was going to get nervous and have to run out to my mom. So this is huge for me and Josh. I didn't know Josh when he was 16, so I can't really speak on that. But I do know him from when he was in his late 20s, and I think the last thing he wanted at that point was to be up on stage. I think I remember you preaching your first message there at Mid-Hudson. And it was not quite as polished and amazing as it is today, but it was good. It was a good word. I don't remember what it was, but... probably something along those lines. Anyway, so that was me and Josh. I did find another photo of me and Vaughn back in the day at Bob and Esther's wedding. I didn't Photoshop Bob out of this picture. I just want you to know he was still coming. I know it looks weird that it's me and Esther, but I was best man. I was best man. That's why there's a distance there. So yeah, but a good photo of me and Vaughn going through pictures with at Dan and Amber's house yesterday. I also realized this photo also shows my age, because instead of getting the digital photo from Dan, while he had it on the TV screen, I took my phone and took the picture of the screen. And then I was like, I could have just had him send me the photo. So that's why it's a little bit blurry. Yeah, praise the Lord. Good memories of the man that kicked me out of this church 15 years ago and sent me to Africa. But in a good way. Good way, guys. And then I think there's one more photo. That's me and Lily and the boys. This is on our big ministry trip last year. Give you a quick bit of background before we get into a video. But the last 2 years have been, before COVID, just before COVID hit, we were like, man, this is like the most difficult year of our life. And then COVID hit and it was like, you know when things get so difficult that you can't help but just laugh? Like, I don't know, my coping mechanism is laughter. Like, when your wife has gone through, like, the worst season of waiting for surgeries and terrible birth injury, and you're stuck in a foreign country. We were in England at the time, where she's from, waiting for surgery, and then they canceled the surgery because of COVID, and it was considered non-life-threatening. And then we got locked down and stuck in England, and you're just going, all right, well, this, the timing of this couldn't have been any more hilarious. The borders actually closed the day before we were supposed to fly out, and it was going to be 24 hours. We got words that, no, the borders are closing tomorrow morning. And they're like, but that's when we're supposed to arrive. Like, no, you won't be able to get in. So we had to cancel our flights. Like, I mean, we were so close to making it back to Zambia in the midst of lockdown and everything else last year, or 2 years ago now, whenever it was. I've just been saying sometime in the last 5 years. So I can't really, the timeline of these last 2 years is like. Anyway, because of all that, getting back to Zambia, Lily still wasn't able to get the surgery that she needed. So we've had a lot of complications in the last 2 years. I won't get into details. But praise the Lord, she just got the surgery last week that she's needed for over 2 years. There's a specialist in New York City that specializes in the exact surgery that she needed. He's one of the top, most renowned doctors in the world for that surgery. And he's right here in New York City. And people fly in from all over the world to actually see him. And we said, it's only an hour and 20 minutes from us. And we went to see him 3 weeks ago. And he said, look, I'm booked all the way till May. But given your situation, you guys are missionaries in Africa. He's like, I've rafted past your house. Like, he's literally been to Zambia. He's like, I'm not going to make you guys fly all the way back from there for the surgery. I'm going to do everything in my power. I'm going to find out who I have to kill to get you in for surgery. He actually said that. On the phone, he's like, hey, who do I have to kill to get a booking for the operation room? I was like, but hey, whatever gets us in. But he amazingly got Lily in for surgery last week, just over a week ago. And she's on bed rest now for a little while, recovering from that. So she couldn't be here this morning. But this is our family. That's us on the ferry. Looking at that picture this morning, I wasn't even going to tell this story, but I looked at the picture, and that picture for me sums up a day in the life of Zambia, because we're, you know, happy and on the ferry. What you don't know is that ferry makes a 3-day drive, a 2-day drive. So if you take that ferry, you don't have to drive another day's drive around to get from our main base to one of our new outlying bases, actually where Corey and Candace are going to be going, in the Northwest Province. So we took that ferry to the Northwest Province, got to the base that we were staying at, camping out for a week, and ran into the ferry operator 2 days before we were supposed to get back on the ferry, like, hey man, we're coming in 2 days, just want to make sure the ferry is good, you still good? He's like, yeah, no. He's like, I got my guys running it, I won't be there, but I'll let them know you're coming. Cool, thanks. Because the last thing you want is to show up at a ferry and find it's non-operational. So we show up that morning. Cooper's already vomited all over the car from motion sickness on the way to the ferry. So we're like, oh, last thing we want to do is spend another day in the car. We get to the ferry, and I'm like, why? Where is everyone? There's no one. The ferry's just like anchored on the shore, and no one's around. And somebody points like, oh, go check up there. So I go up to this like shipping container, and there's a couple guys sat in there. It's like, hey, what's up with the ferry? They're like, ah, yeah, we don't have fuel. Like, okay, well, when is the fuel coming? Like, how do you get fuel? What's the normal protocol for this? Like, when is the delivery truck coming? Like, we don't know. The boss isn't here, we don't know. Like, okay, but what's the normal plan when you run out of fuel? I assume this happens every day? No, we don't have any plan. Okay, so it's going to take me an extra, now I've already driven all the way this way to the ferry, now I've got to backtrack and go another day's drive. So now it's going to be 3 days for me to get to where back home. I was like, well, what can we do? Like, how can we make a plan? Help me, like, I'm willing to do anything. Like, what can I do? If you take a dugout, you go across the river to that side, then you can buy a container of fuel and bring it back. Just 1 gallon is enough, about 1 gallon. I was like, well, how about I give you like $10 roughly and you get 2 gallons, because I don't want to run out halfway across the river. And then, you know, you can bring it back and we can go. So that way I don't have to leave my family here, get in a dugout canoe, all that. Like, oh yeah, that works. I was like, and I'll let you keep the change. It was like $1. And like, oh, okay. So about an hour later, everything got going. They got the fuel on the ferry. And I refused to pay for the ferry. They actually let me not pay for the ferry that morning. Me buying the fuel to fuel it was enough. And the ferry is actually hilarious because, for anybody that's mechanically minded, it's basically like a 2 single-cylinder diesel engines on a makeshift outboard motor that has like a 180-degree pivot. So like it's the most amazing contraption you've ever seen on a floating barge. And they have to get up enough speed with these little, and one guy has each one, and they like basically hold this engine with the prop into the water, And they like cruise across the river, and they have to get up enough speed that you can kind of beach it on the shore, and then hopefully a four by four vehicle to be able to climb the embankment on the other side. So that was just like, that's a normal day. That's kind of like a normal, like if you're going to do a mission ministry trip. I've now told all my friends that take that ferry, I said, hey, maybe save yourself a little bit of hassle. If you have a vehicle that doesn't take diesel, and so you don't have like the extra diesel cans with you, like if you have a gasoline vehicle, just grab an extra jerry can of diesel fuel and have it with you for the ferry. So that's now our new protocol for that ferry. So we look like a nice, you know, nice little family on holiday. I wish you could hear the audio of those chugging diesel engines and know that all that it took to actually get on that ferry. So that was a random little story. I am not even looking at my notes, which is terrifying because I have a lot of them. I don't know where they all came from these last couple days. I'm so glad you guys all enjoyed Oscar, or some of you said you enjoyed Oscar. I don't know. Hopefully all of you did. That really backfired on me because I thought, you know what? Oscar's an amazing preacher. He's gifted. He's anointed. I'm going to send him to my church to preach at my church so I don't have to. And then you guys loved it so much. Josh is like, hey, why don't you take a Sunday too? Because everybody loved Oscar. And I was like, ah. But I was so blessed that he was actually able to come up here. I was sorry I missed it. We were out in Ohio. And it was so awesome, actually. I used to remember dates like nobody's business. But it was, now I can't remember hardly what year my kids were born. But Oscar was actually here exactly 15 years to the day that his pastor, who mentored him from Zambia, came to New York for the first time on his first trip to America. And that was the week that Vaughn actually introduced me to Pastor Thomas. And the week that I found out about Overland, and I'm going to get into a little bit of that. But it was just so cool that he was actually able to be here exactly 15 years later from the time that his mentoring pastor, I don't know if he shared that at all, but it was literally the week he came to New York, it was exactly 15 years later. Pastor Thomas has gone on to be with the Lord. But I was just so blessed for the opportunity to meet him with Vaughn and Wendy up in Hudson when I met Pastor Thomas the week I found out about Overland, and that was the week that really changed my life. I do want to show this video real quick before I get too carried away. It just goes over a little bit. I know you guys heard some from Oscar on what's going on in the field, but this is just a quick 3-minute video. Shows a lot of what's going on with Overland Missions. Actually, it's terrible. I need to actually look at the numbers. I think we're in 17, 19, 25. I can't remember how many countries we're in now. We have about 250 missionaries now across the globe. I've gotten to the age and the point in ministry where I literally look at people like, oh, hey, you, how's it going? What are you doing with your life? Like, I'm a full-time missionary with Overland in Brazil. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. I remember when we were like, there was only like 20 of us when I joined. So it was like everybody knew everybody and knew everybody's name. And now I feel like that old guy who's like, hey, I've met you before. Like, yeah, I was with you for 3 months in Zambia last year. Like, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. Anyway, so we're going to show this video real quick and just to give you guys a quick overview of what's going on.
It's gonna take a lot to drag me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. I bless the rains down in Africa. It's gonna take some time to do the things we never had. An old man along the way, hoping to find some long forgotten words of ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. Oh. I know that I must do what's right.
Your eyes, Kilimanjaro
rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. Oh. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of.
Praise the Lord. So that's just a quick overview. I know there's not a whole lot of explanation to that video. So if you have tons of questions afterwards, come and find me. Or grab one of our postcards, actually. I just saw that in my Bible. It's got our emails and contact details on the back. It's funny because thinking this morning back on really my beginnings with Overland and my time here at Kingsfire before that, I wasn't even actually thinking about the finances like Josh was saying, and I was thinking, man, I wonder how many people I can get to come out. I wonder how many people I could drag out to Zambia instead of. So be warned. That's your warning. I'm going to do everything I can to eliminate your excuses, as Vaughn would have done and did for all of us so many years ago. I figured I should probably open my Bible at least once while I'm up here. So you guys are counting. There we go. I feel like the theme verse really for Overland these last couple of years, with all that the Lord's been doing with the chiefs and the tribal leaders, I'm sure Oscar shared a little bit about that. Oscar's actually had a hand in training up some of the 199 chaplains that Overland has been raising up and discipling these last few years. Those chaplains go to minister alongside a chief, one of the chiefs in Zambia. There's 285 chiefs, I think, in Zambia. But this passage in Isaiah chapter 60, verse 1 through 3, says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and deep darkness the people. But the Lord will arise over you, and his glory will be seen upon you. The Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising." Guys, we have literally had like emperors and kings and leaders over there that we have no business brushing up against, come to our base. The biggest one that came out years ago that really opened the doors to all these leaders that were now ministering alongside in Zambia was an emperor from the Congo that actually came down because he had an amazing encounter with one of our leaders in Overland, where he actually, Jake preached here a couple years ago, but he actually got arrested for no reason, and the emperor found out that an American had been arrested and put in jail in his area, and he said, "Bring him to me. I want to meet him and find out why he's here." And Jake went and said, "Look, I'm just here to preach the gospel." And he said, "Well, that's amazing timing, because we used to have missionaries in this area, and the last gift I want to leave my people before I die is the message of the gospel. So I want to do everything in my power to get missionaries here on the ground." And established. And since then, we have full-time missionaries in the Congo, and we've even been given other missions bases. It was funny because actually, I skimmed over, where was it? Isaiah 61 this morning, and I thought, oh my goodness, that's us too. But obviously, Isaiah 61 is a scripture that we hear so often. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the unacceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to console those who mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. And they shall be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. And they shall rebuild the old ruins. They shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. That jumped out at me this morning, said, and they shall rebuild the old ruins. Overland was literally given a missions base. After the whole encounter with the emperor, there was a missions base that's been there since the late 1800s. They call it actually the Finger of God. The area of it is in Zambia. This missions base was there before they actually established the border between Congo and Zambia. And the missionaries there said, we don't want to end up in the Congo. So when you draw the border, do us a favor and just do like a little whoop so that we can still be in Zambia. And so if you look on the map in Zambia and you zoom in, you'll see what they call the Finger of God, where it's this little point sticking up where it's this missions base that should be in the Congo, but it's actually still legally in Zambia. And that base wasn't getting used to its full potential, and the family that's still the original missionaries there, like the great-grandson or whatever he is, came to Overland and said, look, we've heard the message of what's going forth with you. Like, if you need a place to base out of for your missionaries because you're actually ministering the gospel, we want to let you guys, like, take over this missions base. And so that part of, like, rebuild the old ruins, like, we're literally, like, we're there. We're doing it. We're taking back the things that have been laid out before us in generations past. Anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. So that's a bonus scripture. I didn't even have that one written down. But really, for so many of us that heard Vaughn speak, and he was such a voice in so many of our lives, he was constantly the one to eliminate our excuses. And I don't think any of us to this day have nearly the amount of excuses that he had that he could have been called off the missions field for. That he could have turned back from the race set before him. And I won't share a lot of those stories that actually really got them to the missions field and got them here to ultimately start or raise up this church. But I just remember Vaughn's words were in my head as I was preparing for this message of, I remember him telling the story of a preacher years ago, just sharing his testimony. And like, there's nothing more powerful than your testimony. And I remember, I'm not going to get nearly as loud as Vaughn, but I used to just scream, like, I know my testimony because I was there when it happened. I'm not even going to try to shout it the way he did. I don't know if these new speakers could handle it. I feel like we had to replace them since some of those. But there was so much power in that. Like, I was there when it happened. Like, this is my testimony. This is the stuff that got me to the field. And I think looking at so many faces and so many people in this room this morning who actually helped get me there, and yet I don't know if you actually know all the things that happened to get me there and to get me to where I am today. And so I kind of wanted to actually share a little bit about that. And anyway, back in 2007, when I first heard about Overland Missions, I was going through this time where I was just like, I was just feeling uneasy. I was renting an apartment off Joshny Lane. It was an awesome apartment. It could sleep 12 people. So we used to have a Saturday night service and a Sunday morning service. The whole worship team would end up back in my apartment. We'd all sleep over and then come back here for church on Sunday morning. And I thought it was the coolest thing. I'd finally sort of learned an instrument enough to plunk around on stage. And had learned the bass guitar. And so I was on the worship team. I felt like I'd made it. I had my own apartment. I was out of my parents' house and had two cars. Like, I'm like, this is it. Like, I've reached my peak. I'm 21 years old. I've got it all. And I just got to this point of like, well, now what? Like, and it's actually funny because, you know, I was just thinking, this just popped in my head during worship. You remember Mary Lou preached that word over me? And we kind of became a joke because I have no ability to dance to any sort of rhythm. But she gave this word over me that said, you're going to dance to the beat of your own drum. And so, of course, I would always, you know, take that to the extreme of, you know, dancing just to my... But that, looking back at that, like, that was... I mean, I felt like I'd made it. I was in the team. I was like, okay, I'm here. Now what? Like, okay. And I just had this uneasiness in me. And I was like, I feel like there's got to be something more. I've often said, like, I felt like, okay... Like, if this is it, like, go to church on Saturday and Sunday, 2 days a week, so that's, like, better than most. And plunk around on the worship team and, you know, But we're not adding to our numbers daily. We're not expanding the kingdom. And obviously, looking at this church now to see how much has changed and how much it has expanded is a huge, huge encouragement. But I just felt like for me, I was like, I need something more. And I was really going through this time of dwelling on this. And this one morning, I was on my way to work, and my mind was miles away. And I was just thinking of like all these things that I was like, God, why isn't this working out? Why isn't this working out? I mean, I'm going to church two times a week and I'm on the worship team and I'm following your, I feel like I'm in your will, but why aren't things working out the way I thought they were going to work out? And I was had all these thoughts in my head this one morning, and I'm going to date myself here, but the song Rock Fist by Thousand Foot Crutch, I don't know if anybody, yeah, right? Hoorah. Anyway, that song came on my CD that was on repeat, and I just cranked it up. I was coming over Mohonk Mountain, and I was having my cup of coffee in one hand, my Acura Integra. So, guys, me and Dan really started that movement, and Dave, the Acura Integra movement in this church. But I had removed power steering because that was the cool thing to do, and you know, I was working on my arm strength, and that was about the only working out I've ever done. So I had removed power steering from my car, and I'm cruising over Mohonk Mountain. And I, you know, when you get behind one of those people that's like going the speed limit, it's really annoying. And so I got before the one lane bridge, I managed to get around him. And I got my cup of coffee in my hand and I'm bombing down the mountain. And I got Thousand Foot Crutch cranked up on the radio. And I'm like thinking about, you know, how great and how not great my life is. And I get into this one turn and I drop the clutch to power through the turn. And I don't realize I'm still in third gear. I was just coasting in neutral down the hill. And about 60 miles an hour, it threw me into a spin. And never dropped the coffee. Can't say I didn't spill a drop because it was shooting out of the hole in the top cup of coffee. But I'm like doing 100, I'm fishtailing 180 degrees about six or eight times at 60 miles an hour on Mohonk Road, which any of you know, like you got a guardrail and a cliff. Like either way you go off the road, it's bad news. And thinking if anyone's coming around this corner, like that's it. Anyway, I managed to get the car back under control. Never hit the brakes. I looked down, I was still doing over 50 miles an hour, and I just pulled over in one of like the little pullover areas, and I was like, Lord, forgive me for being selfish and not trusting you. I know you have a plan for my life. Show me what it is. That was literally my prayer that morning. That was January 25th, 2007. That day, I went back to my apartment at Josh Nee Lane's for the first time all week. I think I was staying with Dave Ray. And I went back to my apartment for the first time, and I opened my mailbox, and there was one thing in the mailbox from the whole week. I thought I was going to have like a week's worth of mail, and it was a postcard, and I think I'm going to go to the Saugerties post office, but I wish I could find this postcard, because it was a postcard from the Saugerties post office that said, come in this Wednesday, or next Wednesday, no appointment necessary, bring two passport photos, birth certificate, and driver's license, and you can get a passport. I was like, oh, that'd be cool. Never thought about getting a passport before, but huh. And I went to throw it away in the dumpster. I would throw all my junk mail in the dumpster on the way back to my apartment. I thought, I'm going to keep that because that might be kind of cool to get a passport. To this day, nobody else in my family has a passport. My parents don't. My brother and sister don't. I keep pushing them to get it. But anyway, I have to have something spontaneous like that happen. If it takes an application, you got to download it and print it and then sign it and get it notarized, like forget it. That's why I still haven't gotten my pistol permit in the state of New York. It's like just too much effort. And I'm like, no, forget it. And anyway, it was like one of those things that was like, Joe, this is easy for you. Like this is all it takes. Like you just have to show up. You don't even have to, I didn't have to mail anything. It was like go to the post office and they'll mail it for you. It's like brilliant. Then I have to go like, where do you buy a stamp and all that? Oh, gosh. And so I thought, that would be really cool. Funny enough, I've been talking with my dad that day at work. And he had said, hey, there's this. Okay, I'm going to show my age here. He was like, hey, there's this free course on how to help you sell stuff online. I was like, oh, I'm terrible at selling stuff online. That internet's so confusing. And so he's like, hey. I was like, but I've been thinking, I like really wanted to start getting rid of some of my stuff. Josh was also wanting me to get rid of some of my stuff because it was taking over their basement and all of my apartment and maybe some of the neighbors' apartments and the porch. And I had dismantled the equivalent of two vehicles and had every part of most of those vehicles either in my apartment or in Josh's basement as furniture. Some of it was furniture, yeah. I had all four doors of the car in my apartment as like, you know, the armrest for the sofa. I thought it was awesome. All my tables were made out of tires and wheels. yeah, I had an actual traffic light. Most of my seats were actually the seats out of my former car. I was like, yeah, have a seat on the, that's my passenger seat. Go ahead, sit down. But yeah, so Josh was also wanting me to get rid of some of my stuff. But I said to my dad that morning, I said, you know, I've really been wanting to actually look at starting to get rid of some of my stuff because I feel like I can't go anywhere. I can't travel. I wouldn't be able to leave. I couldn't move out of my apartment with the state. Oh, where are you going? I was like, oh, I don't know. Anyway, so the same morning, I have now signed up for a course on how to get rid of some of my stuff online. I get a postcard in the mail telling me how to get my passport in the exact description and exact instructions that I needed. And then I was on my way. We were having a special Thursday night service over at Barbarossa because some missionary guy from Africa was coming in. And I was on the worship team. That's why I was going. Probably wouldn't have gone otherwise, but I had to. Elaine made me. I called my parents actually on the way to that service. I thought, oh, my parents love missionaries. Like, we always used to host missionaries. Like, maybe they'll probably want to know that not only is there going to be a missionary, but I'm going to also be playing bass guitar. So, you know, hey, mom and dad, if you want to come see me, you know, rocking, slapping the bass on the stage. It was a little bit selfish that I invited my parents there that evening. And they showed up, which, if you know my parents, at the time, my brother was 3. He was a huge surprise. I was 21. Leave it at that. And anyway, they showed up at this meeting on a Thursday evening, like 20 minutes later. They were like, yeah, we're coming. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And they showed up, and it was the former director of Overland Missions talking about sell all you have and going to the missions field. And I had that, like, you know, that nauseous knot that you get, and you're like, stop it. Anyway, so I managed to suppress it enough to play it really cool in that meeting. And kind of, I did the cool sly sneak up to the front and swiped a brochure off the front seat and shoved it in my pocket, made sure nobody saw me. I was like, okay, yeah, that was smooth. And Vaughn walked up to me about 30 seconds later with one of those brochures, and I think he actually smacked me in the face with it and said, you need to do this. And I was like, yeah, I know, I get it. And my mom walked up to me right after that, which was just as much confirmation as Vaughn, less aggressive. But my mom walked up to me and said, she's like, hey, when are you leaving? I was like, what do you mean? She's like, come on, that was totally for you. And now my mom is like, you know, one of those, not over-doting, but she's a doting Jewish mother. She actually doesn't say, call me when you get there as much as my grandma does. But she was like, she doesn't like flying. So I'm like, the last thing she's going to want me to do is get on a plane. She used to take me to youth group and wait for me at youth group. So, like, the last thing she's going to want me to do is go to Africa. She can't really wait for me over there. For her to come up to me and say, when are you leaving? That was the biggest, one of the biggest confirmations for me. 3 months and a week later, me and Bob Iannuso were on our way to Zambia for 3 months. In that, cool side story, I didn't know what to do with my apartment. I got rid of as much as I could, cleaned out whatever I could. Ended up just calling in a truck, like a wrecker truck, to come and haul most of the stuff away. They did multiple loads of car parts off to the scrapyard. But I didn't know what to do with my apartment at all. I had a ton of furniture. It's funny seeing that both of you here. But the furniture that was given me, I had a lounge suite from Roseanne. Like, I knew that wasn't right. Roseanne actually gave me a lounge set when we were working at her house 15, 16 years ago. And I was walking these two sofas into the apartment, and Elaine walks by and goes, now Elaine and Roseanne didn't know each other this time. But Elaine walks by and goes, I have the matching armchair and ottoman for that set. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah. So I had a 4-piece living room set given to me from two different women that are in this church right now that didn't know each other and hadn't bought the set together. So I don't know how that worked out, but it was awesome. So I had a pretty sweet apartment. It was like plaid. I mean, this was like cool plaid. It was like maroon and blue and green and burgundy. Awesome furniture. And that was the thing back then. I had that, and I had the bunk beds. I had bunk beds. I still slept in a bunk bed at 22. Everybody loved it. Me and Jimmy Segretti in bunk beds in a room together. off topic here. But I didn't want to give up on my furniture because I was like really cool and really special to me. And it was given to me by the Lord, obviously. I couldn't really afford to rent the apartment for the 3 months I was gone. So Elaine said, hey, why don't we sublet it? And she's like, if you're willing to leave your furniture, I was like, yeah, hey, great. So it got down to like 3 weeks before I'm supposed to leave. And she's like, hey, look, we don't have anyone to sublet it. We might have to actually list it. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to have to just like throw away all my furniture or something. Just before I was supposed to leave, Elaine calls me. She's like, you're not going to believe this. I've got a girl that just called me from California. She wants to rent it from the week after you leave to the week before you get back if you're willing to leave all your furniture. I was like, heck yes. Like, yeah, if she, like, if it keeps me having to throw away my furniture, she can do whatever she wants with it. And I get to keep my apartment, like bonus, so that when I'm back from this three-month stint, I can move back into my apartment that I love and have an awesome furniture set from. And I ended up calling Josh, I think about, I can't remember, it was about halfway through or 8 weeks into my time in Zambia, and I'm like, I can't go back. Like, if I go back and move into my apartment, like, I don't know if I'm ever going to leave again. And so I called Josh and said, hey, list the apartment. I'm like, just list it. Like, I'll come back. I'll get rid of my furniture when I get back. And anyway, I got back to New York, and I said, hey, do you get, like, any takers for the apartment? He's like, no, dude. I mean, all your furniture's still in it. The door's unlocked. You may as well just move back in until we find someone to rent the apartment. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And so I actually walked into the apartment, and I sat down on the sofa, and I was like, I can't do it. I cannot, if I move back into this apartment, if I sleep in this apartment, I'm going to get comfortable, and I'm never going to leave again. And I grabbed the deluxe forest home, the Coleman suite tent that Josh and Elaine had given me. That was, actually fit most of my furniture in it, believe it or not. And I hiked that tent into the woods behind Josh and Elaine's house. They probably thought I was a crazy person. Still may think I'm a crazy person. But I hiked that tent into the woods behind their house, and I camped in the woods for 10 weeks to raise money to get back to Zambia. And yeah, whatever furniture I couldn't get rid of, I did end up with one of the sofas, not my bunk bed, a different bed. I had a dresser. I had that sweet cherry dining room table set. All fit in my tent, mind you. It was awesome. When the police came to evict me, they were probably really confused that I actually hiked all that stuff into the woods. I would love to see the look on their face. I wasn't there, unfortunately. They just left a note. But if I would love to meet the Saugerties police officer that actually left the eviction notice on my dresser being held down by my alarm clock in the middle of the woods. Just to know what they're like. What were they thinking? Like, they're like, they get a call for a squatter. Anyway. Yeah, so if you're out there, you're listening online to the officer that kicked someone off the Woodstock site for illegal camping, that was me. Yeah, Woodstock 94, good times. I wasn't there, actually. That was where I was camping, though, was on the property for Woodstock 94. But yeah, so that was my humble beginnings. And I did. I refused to move back into the apartment. Except for one night when Jesse first came to visit. I was like, hey, you can stay with me in my tent in the woods. He's like, you have an apartment, dude. Your furniture's still in there. Like, the door's unlocked. Why wouldn't we sleep in your apartment? I was like, because the tent is way cooler. So he convinced me to sleep one night back in the apartment. But other than that, like, that was my, I had to do that. I knew I had to do that. I had to burn my bridges in the sense of, I cannot get comfortable. I cannot settle back into mediocrity. I need to do this. And so that was really what got me out. 11 weeks later, I was on a plane, a one-way ticket at that point, heading back actually to England, where we drove to Zambia, which I don't know how you guys are at geography, but it's about 10,000 miles across 20 countries through three continents. So it was that was an intense road trip. But I just wanted to I have tons of stories that I want to share, which I don't know how many. I know it's already time, but you guys are stuck. You're here. Captive audience. Lock the doors. But Vaughn always shared this story that was really him and Wendy's story. They called it the egg story. And I remember hearing that story and just being like there was no chance. Like, that wasn't God. You know, where Vaughn literally looked at Wendy and said, Wendy, I fancy an egg. You fancy an egg? And she went, yeah, I fancy an egg. And she reached down under the bench, their park bench that they were sat on, and pulled out a bag of eggs that they hadn't put there. And it turns out they were hard-boiled, so they could actually eat them right then and there. And I just remember that story was so impacting to me. And it's not nearly as iconic as that, because it wasn't really the provision of the Lord. But for me, it was my egg story, where when I was raising funds to get out to Zambia the first time, I had this really cool vision of myself wearing one of those mag lights, you know, with the holster. And, you know, I had the mini mag light. I didn't want to wear the full-length one because that's a little bit excessive, but I had the cool little cute little mini mag light. And I wanted to wear it in a holster because then you don't have to have it taking up one of your cargo pockets, because obviously I still wore, you know, cargo pants because I was that cool. And so I wanted the holster so that I could carry around the flashlight during the day so that at night, you know, when I'm walking around the bush, I could just whip it out of my holster. And it turns out I had the mag light, but I couldn't find the holster for it, and mine somehow didn't come with one. And so I asked my dad, I was like, hey, do you have one of those holsters? And he was like, no. We looked through his drawers, he's like, no, I don't have one. So I went to Sports Authority, I went to Dick's, I went to Gander Mountain, I went to Walmart. Nobody would sell just the holster. I'm like, I don't want to buy another flashlight, I just want that cool little like nylon holster thing. Anyway, came down to the weekend before I was supposed to leave, and I was helping my dad out at a job. And he said, hey, can you clean out the job site before the customer gets in for the weekend? I said, yeah. So I went and I cleaned out this bathroom. We had literally built the bathroom. Like, we framed the floor joists that week. Plywooded, built the bathroom. Okay. The bathroom wasn't there before that week. So I went and I cleaned it, did a really good job. I'm OCD when it comes to cleaning and stuff. Josh used to bring me into some of his job sites just to, you know, really fine-tooth clean homes for some of these city people that would come up. And anyway, so I'm like, I'm OCD. When I clean something, it's clean. Anyway, I cleaned this bathroom really well. My dad went to check on it after I left, and he came home and he said, hey, you dropped this when you were cleaning the bathroom. And he hands me a mini maglite holster. And I said, no, I didn't drop that. He's like, well, I knew you said you were looking for one. I assumed you found it and you dropped it in the bathroom then. I said, no, I didn't ever find one. He's like, well, there you go. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, it wasn't there. I know it wasn't there. Anyway, so if that wasn't enough, I was like, so I literally stuck it in my pocket, and I went, that's so weird. And I walked up the driveway, and my sister's friend, who we'd kind of grown up with, pulled up, and I thought, oh, I should say goodbye to her. We're like grown up together, not going to see her for 3 months. And she used to like live in her car. You know, one of those people that like, you can't see the floors. Her car was generally kind of in a state. And I walk up and I look in her car, I'm like, oh my gosh, you cleaned it. She's like, yeah, I just had the whole thing, like I just detailed the whole thing. And it was immaculate, like this car was so clean. And I look in the back seat, and there's nothing in the back seat except for in the middle of the back seat is a mini maglite holster. And I said, Emily, why do you have a mini maglite holster on your back seat? She's like, oh my gosh, I have no idea how that got there. I just cleaned the whole car and that thing just appeared there. If you know what it is, you can have it. I was like, yeah, it's one of these. It's one of these. And I pulled the other one out of my pocket. She's like, yeah, here you go. I'm like, now I have two. I could go dual wielding. And so that was one of those. That for me was my egg story. That was like my you know, it's the little things. It wasn't, I didn't need it because I was going to go hungry, but it was one of those cool little things that the Lord did for me. Looking back, he could have spared me some embarrassment and just not let me find a mini maglite holster. But anyway, no, I was the cool guy there, in a sea of homeschoolers that were there that year. Sorry, I didn't. No disrespect to fellow homeschoolers. But also one other story that popped in my mind. I was so excited actually to see Stacy here this morning, because she was on my mind yesterday as I was jotting down notes. But when I was raising money to go on that first trip to AMT, I remember Stacy came up to me. I was getting right to my deadline of needing to get the last bit of money in for Overland. And Stacy came up to me and said, oh, how much do you still need? And I was like, I need about $1,000. Like, I'm still about $1,000 away, and I have like 3 days to get it. And Stacy said, okay, yeah, I'll believe the Lord for that with you. I was like, oh, okay. And now Stacy has like, you know, blessed me tons over the years in ministry, but I thought, okay, yeah, we'll just pray about it. Yeah, let's do that. And so we prayed about it, and the next day I got two checks for $500 from people that Stacy, there's no way she called them to like, hey, Joe still needs $1,000, just so you know. The two people that Stacy didn't have their contact details for both sent me checks, and that was it. That was the last money I got. I never got another check to get ready for AMT. And I often thought after that, like, what if my faith would have been for a little bit more? Like, what if I said, hey, Stacy, pray for $2,000? Because that'd be nice to have an extra little buffer there. And so, but that was just like, that to me was such a huge testimony of like, literally prayed for it the exact amount and it came in the next day. Anyway, those are some of the stories I want to share. I have a few more minutes, right? You guys aren't that hungry. Another random story I just wanted to share just for the heck of it. Hold on 1 second. I'm getting well ahead of myself here. Sorry. Huh? I'm not gonna bring off. He's kidding. He's a hard act to follow here. I had to really step up my game after knowing Oscar was here. Jeez. Anyway, so that really just made me the egg story for me was really just Matthew chapter 7, verse 7 through 12. And obviously, it's a scripture we all know, but it's ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be open. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? And really for me, I mean, guys, we're all God's children. And I think sometimes he sees the desires of our heart, even if we don't consciously. Confession time here. I never sat down and prayed for a mini Maglite holster and then say, dear Lord, please give me a mini Maglite holster. I really thought I could find that one in my own strength somewhere at, you know, one of the sporting goods stores in Kingston. But he sees the desires of our heart, and he's a good father. He wants to give us the desires of our heart. Anyway, that was the heart of my message that I wanted to share. But I'm going to just share a fun story just for the heck of it, to just show you guys how much really my history and everything ties in with. I love what Josh and Lane are doing up on the hill. But Buzzy Walker, probably a lot of you didn't know, Stacy's brother. We called him Johnny Walker on the trip that we were on, because he. You obviously see all the billboards for Johnny Walker. Keep walking, Johnny Walker. But Buzzy came up to me in 2007. He kept coming up to me when I was in that time where I was living in a tent in the woods. He kept coming up to me and said, man, I really want to do what you're doing. I just want to go. He's like, I just want to go like to Africa like you. He's like, but I've got the quarry. I've got the gas station. I got this. I got that. He's like, there's just no way I can get away. I said, no, look, bro, I'm not judging you. Like, there's no ways you're coming on this trip with me. Like, you know, you're older. And got a lot of stuff holding you back. Like, I get it. Like, no hard feelings. And the week before I'm supposed to leave on this one-way trip, I had a one-way ticket, and I'm going. We're going to drive through these 20 countries. Buzzy comes up. He's like, I'm going with you. I was like, yeah, right. He's like, no, I seriously am. I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah, I bought a ticket. And he ended up on this epic trip. And really, I think that, I want to say it changed his life. I can't speak for him, but I think that trip, for anyone that knew him, that trip wrecked him in a good way. But on that trip, one of my favorite, for those that don't know, the house that Josh and Elaine are in, building the property that the church is going on, was his house. And so that's where he lived. And that property was all their property and stuff. Anyway, he ends up on this epic trip with me through 20 countries, and my favorite, by far my favorite small world encounter happened on this trip. To this day, I don't think it's been topped. But we get back to our tents one night. We're on this awesome trip. We are camping in the capital of Sudan on the Nile River at the convergence of the Blue Nile and the White Nile. Now, mind you, I'm going to paint a little picture for you here. Mind you, like everybody said, okay, Don't tell them you're American. Like, we all had Canadian hats. We had the Canadian flag hats. The one Canadian person on the trip thought we should all have. Like, look, it's less threatening than America, okay? So put your little maple leaf on. And so they're like, hey, don't tell anyone you're American. Don't tell them you're Christian. Definitely don't tell them you're a Jew. And try not to look so white. So those are the, I'm like, I got four counts against me here. And so we're camping on the banks of the Nile River. And we get walking up to our tents one night, and there's like 10 Sudanese guys playing cards right outside our tents. And we're like, okay, we try to like a nervous skirt around them. And one of them goes, hey, I hear you're from the States. I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, no doubt, whereabouts? Like a Sudanese guy saying, no doubt, whereabouts. You're like, okay, I'm intrigued. I go, New York. He goes, oh, where in New York? I go, upstate. He goes, oh, get out. Upstate where? Like, bro, you want my address? Like, what are you going to do? Come and find me? Like,
So I'm like, I didn't want to tell him High Falls or New Paltz or Saugerties, any of the places I really lived. But so I said at Kingston, you know, it's the central, most centrally located part. He goes, oh, first state capital of New York. I was like, that's my line. I tell people that. And most people in Kingston don't know that. I used to tell people all the time, like, oh, from the first state capital of New York, obviously, you know, Kingston. They're like, what? Okay. But to have this Sudanese guy on the banks of the Nile River know that, like, this is the first state capital, like, that was awesome. So I'm like, how the heck did you know that? He goes, oh, man, y'all are all proud about it. You got to plaster it up on I-87. I was like, you've been on I-87? Like, what the heck? He goes, yeah, I had a delivery route on Broadway for 10 years. I'd pick up in Newburgh and, you know, rock over to Broadway. And so by that point, Buzzy's come over. He's jumped in the conversation. He goes, oh, so you know the mobile gas station. He goes, oh, most convenient gas station in Kingston. I used to fill up there all the time. And Buzzy goes, yeah, I own that gas station. This guy throws his cards down. He's like, get out of town. He starts yelling at all his friends. He's like, this guy owns the gas station in Kingston that I fill up at. Anyway, so all the guys there are like, okay, whatever. They're like, come on, grab a seat. What are you guys drinking? We're like, we were in with the locals. Like, I have never been in with the locals. And then leave it to Buzzy to take it one step further. So he goes, okay, so now that we're all here and comfortable with each other, let me ask, how hard is it to get guns here? Like, can you have a handgun? Can you carry? We're in Khartoum. 2 weeks before, this is 2 weeks before they shot the U.S. ambassador in Khartoum. So we're like in the city. They're like, oh yeah, it's pretty difficult. The guys start pulling out their sidearms and sliding them across the tables for us to look at. I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, what is going on? Anyway, that opened up. It turns out all these guys were like important leaders and in government there in Sudan. And it actually opened up incredible opportunities. And where do we go? We're told we have to get this permission and this permission and that permission. They're like, don't do any of that. Here's my card. Anyone stops you on the way, call me. And these guys just gave us like smooth sailing the rest of the way through Sudan. So it was such an awesome God encounter. And so that was one of my favorite times of that trip. And then later on in that trip, things started to get, okay, you're 8 weeks on the road with people through 20 countries. You start to get a little sick of each other. I got really discouraged by the leaders on that trip, who I felt were making some terrible decisions. And I got to the point on that trip where I thought, you know what? We're going to be in Nairobi, Kenya. This is the missions capital of the world, like Nairobi, Kenya. I could easily like sneak out of the truck with my bicycle, and I got all my stuff together and actually thought one night I offered to guard the truck overnight and I thought I'm just going to like cycle off and go join a different ministry that's actually doing what they say they're doing because I don't like the way these people are running this trip. And I kid you not, I had a dream of Vaughn. And before that trip, he had said, he came to me and Bob and came to us, he said, he goes, I have half a notion to make you sign a blank piece of paper because I don't care what, and he listed three names, Philip Smethurst and the leaders of that trip. He said, I don't care what they say to you, how ridiculous it is, no matter what, you do what they say. And in that moment, I woke up to his words, and his words to me in that dream were, are you really going to let one man's actions change the course of your life and change your experience of this trip? And I woke up actually choked up, and I thought, okay, no, I'm going to stick this out. If I hadn't stuck it out, I obviously wouldn't be here to get today. And that making me sign a blank piece of paper, which I don't remember if I actually did or if I did. Can we have that destroyed? If it's on file anywhere, Wendy, I don't know if I still want that blank piece of paper kicking around. But no, it was awesome to know. It was awesome to know that I didn't have anywhere to go back to. That's what I mean about burning your bridges. If I left the trip then and came back and said, oh, Vaughn, you don't know. He was being ridiculous. The leaders, they made some terrible calls. And, you know, that's why I did this. Like, I know Vaughn would have thumped me. I really had nowhere to go back to. I knew that if I abandoned the assignment here, I couldn't come back to the assignment here and continue, you know, playing the bass on stage. And I do feel like I did try to come back a couple times and play the bass. And the last time I think I walked off this stage, it was probably one of the most iconic walk-offs of, like, I just was stood there as Roy Fields with his giant lion's mane was staring at me, mouthing the what I was supposed to play, and I'm like, ah, and I looked out and I saw Ashley. I was like, yeah, I walked off the stage, passed the guitar from the worship set, and that was the last time I play bass guitar. So that was the final bridge that needed to be burned, where I knew I couldn't come back to, you know, hopping in the worship team. But really, when I say, you know, burn your bridges, that's more what I'm getting at, is don't have a fallback plan, don't have a backup plan, because Egypt does look great. You know, when you have a long season on the field and you think, oh my gosh, I really could go back. I could get a job as a carpenter again, and maybe they'll let me back on the worship team. You've got to have those stories. You got to have those experiences. You got to have those memories. You have to have been there when it happened to know that this is where I'm supposed to be, and not turn back from your assignment. So I think that was what I wanted to share. I didn't really have any clear message laid out, but I hope that all made sense. So guys, if anything I spoke today resonates in anyone's heart, if you do want to come out, love to have you out in Zambia. Chat to me afterwards. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, I'll be at the back. If you want to do a two-week trip with Overland or the three-month AMT training program, let me know. And if you want to sign up to support us monthly, you can chat to me about that too. Or if you want to support Oscar, I don't know if anybody didn't have a chance to support him monthly as well, I get you set up for that also. So, guys, thanks for letting me share here today. Thanks, Pastor Josh.
That's awesome, buddy.
Thanks.